Hello, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Capitals Report. It is Wednesday, August the 3rd. John Walton, Mike Vogel with you here and chatting about the Caps as we get into what is charitably the quietest month throughout the hockey world. August, never a whole lot going on, but for the Capitals, well, right now they do have a little bit going on. There's still Dmitry Orlov hanging out there as you're looking to get everything officially and utterly sewn up. Dmitry did not file for arbitration back at the end of June. This is a matter of finding a right number. I suppose, if you're Brian McClellan, if you're the Caps, if you're Dmitry for that matter, in what is maybe taking a little bit longer than we might have thought, but on some level, maybe that makes a little bit of sense too.
Yeah, I think when Dmitry did not file for arbitration, you're figuring, this is going to get done pretty quickly. But you got to remember too, sometimes these things, they just drag into the training camp or right up to the edge of that. For real, no particular reason. I mean, people are out of town, people are on vacation. It's just kind of tough to connect. I don't think this is going to be a problem. You look at Matt Dumba's contract with Minnesota recently signed, 2.55 is his number. I think the Caps would be happy to get Dmitry in for that number or anywhere right in that ballpark. I don't expect Dmitry Orlov to make more than Carl Alsner makes this year, which is, I think, 2.8. I think this is going to get taken care of fairly simply. You started to see numbers. Marcus Johansson's number came in. You started to see other guys like Chris Kreider sign. I think that the Dumba number will probably help. You're never going to find two exact comparable players, but I think if you look at what Dumba's done so far in his career and what Orlov has done so far in his career, just in terms of number of games, number of points, and such things that you would use to determine a number, I think they're similar enough that you're going to find a pretty tight correlation between Orlov's eventual number and the one that Dumba signed at.
Bill asking about Dmitry, certainly other fans have as well off of Twitter. I got a little bit of response on that today. Certainly once Dmitry is in the fold, and certainly no reason to think that it isn't just around the corner as we get into the early part of August here. You pretty much know what this team is, and you certainly know who the defensemen are going to be. And I guess one of the questions that we'll be looking at as we head into training camp, once we get into September and the guys hit the ice for the first time, what would be the same as far as defensive combinations from last year and what may be different? And certainly the biggest same would have to be, barring an injury or barring something unforeseen, Matt Niskanen and Carl Alsner, write them down, put them in ink. Can't believe that that would be any different. They've been together for two straight years and they've never missed a game together. But beyond that, Dmitry's role is certainly part of that, of where he elevates to and who he may be with. And you got Nate Schmidt sitting there after a full year in the league and getting his first taste of playoff action. There's a lot of guys who are still in the early part of their careers, like Nate and Dmitry. You've got Brooks, who getting into the later part of his career. There's a lot that we'll be keeping an eye on once we hit the ice here in another month today.
Yeah, and I think, you know what, during the preseason, it makes sense to, even if you do plan on having Alsner and Niskanen play together every game this season, knock on wood, that they're healthy and able to do so, it makes sense to juggle them up a little bit in the preseason, let them feel some level of comfortability with other partners. As we saw in game six of the the last game in Pittsburgh there, what happened when Carl Alsner went out. Matt Niskanen hadn't played with anybody besides Carl Alsner since coming to Washington,
here.
Which is incredible to
really
think
is.
About. So I don't think it's a bad thing for you to build in at least some level of familiarity with pretty much every possible combination, every reasonable possible combination. You don't need to have two righties playing with each other because that's not going to happen. But I don't think that's a bad idea just to have, even if it's a preseason game, to have a couple guys just play a game here with this guy, see how that works out. But I agree. I mean, if it's not broken, and it clearly isn't, those two guys were money throughout the season, then I would expect them. I think that, you know, once Brooks Orpik and John Carlson were both out of the lineup and those two guys had to step up and assume that top shutdown role in those key minutes, they did it with pass with flying colors. I can't see any reason to change it other than, you know, just like I said, having a level of comfort between Niskanen and the rest of the guys on the blue line, and Alzner and the same.
It's going to be a different kind of training camp, given that the World Cup is going to be going on in Toronto. A lot of bigger stars are not going to be with their teams for maybe a little bit if you're playing all the way to October 1st, maybe a lot. If Nick Backstrom and Sweden have a great run and Sweden's got a great team, maybe it's a while before we see him. But just in theory and just thinking about other teams and how coaches approach training camp, when you've got other guys to look at and you're going to have this staggered schedule of when people are here. I'm thinking specifically not so much about Washington and Barry going into his third year and the coaching staff intact from what we have known these last couple of years, but for a new coach coming in, like a Glenn Gullitzen in Calgary, you're going into your first camp, and if you're missing guys, if you've for whatever reason, you're starting later. I mean, depending on who you're missing, Washington obviously has more guys there than maybe a Calgary does. But the coaches have a bit of a unique challenge here as they come into training camp about how do you get guys games, and everything starts a little later, and then even the schedule's a little more compressed because of the World Cup, and you're playing the 2-and-2s and a lot more travel, and the Caps certainly have that challenge. There are some things that the coaching staff, as we're sitting here in August, no doubt are planning for and thinking of once we get a little bit closer to that.
It's definitely going to be unlike anything. You know, it hasn't happened before, so they're going to be dealing with it for the first time, I don't remember it going down like, for certainly in 2004 it wasn't a problem because you're looking at a lockout. There was no training camp, so it didn't really matter. So we're going back to 1996. The game was much different then. I got to think none of the guys, or very few of the guys who were head coaches then, are dealing with it again now. Maybe Ken Hitchcock and one other guy or something, but I think the Caps are very fortunate to have Todd Reirden and Lane Lambert on staff, two guys who have head coaching experience at the American League level, and I think that'll help out a lot. And I think the other good thing is, for the most part, I would say 90%+ of the cases, and maybe the outliers are that young team, the young guns team, so to speak. Mm-hmm. These guys, everybody knows what Alex Ovechkin's role and Nicklas Backstrom's role is going to be. So being without them during training camp, and it's not like they're off injured or, you know, on vacation somewhere. They're still going through their reps. They're going to be in shape. They're going to be, training, just not with the rest of the team. So it is absolutely going to present some challenges. But I think that teams that have staffs that have been through a lot, and that have staffs whose resumes are a little bit varied, where you've got guys, again, like I said, with Lambert and Reirden, who have head coaching experience, plenty of assistant coaching experience at this level, and Todd Reirden, you know, interviewing for the Calgary job. I think the Caps will be okay, but certainly it is something that there's gonna have to be a lot of sit down and discussion amongst the staff at this time of year, like you say, to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks and everything gets nailed down pretty reasonably. What's today, August 3rd? We still got a ways to go, but, you know, it'll be here before you know. We got that rookie camp, I think September 16th. Guys will be going down to Florida for that. So that's pretty much, that's the date we're looking at when things start to get geared back up. And, you know, we're basically in that training camp preseason mode.
We've spent the last couple of shows talking about not only the Caps, but some things going on within the Metropolitan Division. And a look at the Columbus Blue Jackets this week, because they made a little bit of news. Sam Gagne signing there, a one-year deal at $600,000, a guy who I believe is making somewhere in the range of 3.5 with the Flyers, a guy who, in terms of points in his career, I think he's third right now on the Columbus roster as he comes in. And this move, to me, brilliant on a lot of levels, because after they traded Ryan Johansson last year to Nashville, they lost their number one center. They had that center depth for when people thought Columbus might be a playoff team when they traded Johansson. Now it was, maybe they had to move Boone Jenner over, and then Tortorella had pretty much said, and I think by and large within the organization, they like Jenner playing the left wing there. Now if this works out on a budget that they can bring in a guy like Gagne, it strengthens them down the middle. I don't think anybody, given what Columbus has done over the last couple of years, where there have been expectations and then for whatever reason they have fallen completely flat, I don't know that anybody's going to say Columbus, oh, maybe they're a playoff team now. Maybe they will be, but certainly the Gagne signing helps that team quite a bit. Another team in the Metropolitan Division, it gets a little bit better.
This is a team that's been crippled by some really bad contracts over the last few years, and they've still got a few of them. They bought out of Jared Bohl, and they bought out of Federer Tootin over the offseason here. But adding Gagne is probably nothing but upside. Certainly, he's a guy, fifth overall pick back in 2007, who hasn't quite reached his potential. So getting him in at a really reasonable cost, and they didn't have a lot of money to spend, again, because they had the two buyouts, they've got a ton of bad contracts, and they made that, they had to have that contract with Seth Jones that was of prime importance, and they got that taken care of. So being able to, like you say, add a guy in, and Gagne, like Jenner, can play the middle or play one of the wings. Now they've got some options, and Gagne is going to be motivated, obviously, taking a huge haircut there on the pay scale. Like you said, I think he was upper threes, lower fours. His cap hit was around $4 million from a deal he'd signed. And, you know, he's been passed around a little bit. You know, he had a decent enough start to his pro career with Edmonton, probably fell a little bit short of expectations up there, and he's bounced around quite a bit since then. So he's looking, he's still a young guy, still got, you know, some prime years ahead of him if he can sort it out and get it together. But yeah, he's got the possibility of being a productive top six guy. He has been. It's been a year or two since he's put up the kind of numbers you like to see from someone who's getting those kind of minutes. And he even did a stint in Lehigh Valley last year and was a healthy scratch on a lot of occasions. But by the time the playoffs rolled around, as we saw here, he was in the lineup every night. So, you know, it's a good fit for him, I would think. It gives him a chance. You take that one-year lump as far as the salary goes, a chance for him to, not unlike the Brett Connolly deal for Washington. Both these guys, top five, top six picks overall. Connolly doesn't even have the resume that Gagne has, but Connolly's a few years younger as well, but similar signings.
Got to think, too, when you think about the deal that was signed, and it's just one guy, but you've gotten to the point of the summer here in August where if you're still sitting on the sideline, you got a chance that you're going to get squeezed a little bit, and just finding a job at this point starts to really weigh on guys that aren't currently employed at this point, I would think.
There aren't a lot of teams that have a lot of cap space that they can, you know, fling a $2.5 or $3 million contract or cap hit in your face. So a guy like Jiří Hudler or a guy like Chris Russell who is still sitting out there, either you got teams that are fairly well set and don't have a lot of cap space, or you got teams that are close enough to the floor or at the floor and don't really care about exceeding the floor by too many dollars. So yeah, I got to think, you know, we're at that stage and you're starting to see these invitations to you know, training camp invitations that we've seen that have become sort of in vogue here the last few years, where you give a guy an invitation. I'll let Derek Roy here last year. Yeah. Bring him in, take a look, see what he's got. Either he makes the team or he doesn't. There's very little, there's really no risk for the team. You bring the guy in, you're paying for him to come to camp, and that's about it. So I think a lot of these guys, and there's still tons of them out there, are probably going to be in a position of settling for that sort of circumstance or situation and then coming to camp and hoping that they can either forge their way onto a team. And it's pretty hard to do when you're only going to get two, three, four exhibition games to show what you can do and wrest a job away from somebody else, or you're hoping for an injury or something like that, or something to become muddied enough that you can work it into a roster spot. But as we see, what winds up happening is guys' careers wind up being over with a couple of years before they probably expected them to. Yeah. Curtis Glencross, a good example from this time last year, just never found a fit and wound up retiring, still a young guy. And I would bet money that a year or so before that was probably thinking, you know, I'll be UFA and maybe I'll get a three-year deal or something. And they're just not there. This league is going younger. It's trending younger, and it makes sense. Those players are cost-controlled, and they're cost-controlled for longer. So either the only way for those guys to compete is to take contracts that are on par with what a team would pay an entry-level player, which is what Sam Gagne just did.
As news breaks and Dmitry Orlov contract or whatever may happen through the month of August, honestly, probably going to be pretty quiet other than Orlov, but Stay tuned to WashingtonCaps.com, Mighty Metal Sports Network. But for now, in the meantime, we'll check with you back here in another week or two here on the Caps Report.